A Jungian and a Witch podcast. I'm your co-host, Molly, the queen behind Queen of Cups Apothecary and your resident witch. This is my dad, Steve, a Jungian analyst with over 30 years experience, a master's in divinity, and a myth expert. Join us as I get the Jungian perspective on a wide range of witchy topics. Hello and welcome to a Jungian and a Witch podcast. Today, Dad and I will be talking about myths. This is a big topic for him because he has a book called Living Myth, and he is a myth expert. So we're going to get down to basics. What are myths? What does it mean to be living a myth? Why are myths so important? And how are myths created? I hope you enjoy. All right, Dad, back again for another episode. And I think you're really going to like the topic today.
Oh, I can't wait.
I'm going to ask you to, we're going to have to keep it very base level because I know you know a lot about this. And today I want to clarify, what are myths?
Yes, that's a very big topic, isn't it?
I know. And we need a baseline for it. And the reason why I ended up picking this was I actually saw someone in one of my witchy groups and they made a post about it was the first time they had heard someone refer to Catholicism as a myth and how freeing it was for them and how healing it was for them. And they'd never heard this before. And I thought, wow, I think a lot of people don't really know what myths are if they don't realize that Christianity is a myth.
And I think maybe they don't realize what myths are in so many other ways too.
That's true.
It's used in a very pejorative sense in our culture.
Yeah.
Pejorative means a negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that in our culture, to say something is a myth is to say that it is false, it is untrue.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that Jungians use myth, that's not how we use it at all. But
yeah.
People have a negative connotation to myth in the sense of it means that it's something made up.
Yeah, I get that. Well, I thought we would start out like we have done the last few with me reading the definition and seeing if you like it or not.
Okay. And you're reading it from the Oxford Dictionary?
So Oxford actually paywalled me. It only gave me one.
Okay.
So this is Merriam-Webster.
Ah.
So good. It still should be, you know, a good standard. So they have two. And the first one is a usually traditional story of ostensibility. I didn't know what that word was. So that means an outward appearance. So a usually traditional story of outward appearance, historical events that serve to unfold part of the worldview of a people or explain a practice, belief, or natural phenomenon.
It's a lot. I mean, that's in the ballpark. So
in the ballpark.
That's probably the best definition we've had.
I think so too. Yeah. Their second one is not bad either. It's a popular belief or tradition that has grown up around something or someone.
And my only criticism is they're confusing the term myth with legend.
That makes sense.
So when, yes, there are stories about all kinds of people like George Washington and that grow up. And it's not the myth of George Washington. It's the legend of George Washington.
Okay. That makes sense.
When there's a historical figure involved and the stories grow up because people like legends.
Yeah. They make good stories.
Yeah. I'm trying to think.
Paul Bunyan.
I was thinking of Paul. And so you wouldn't say the myth of Paul Bunyan, it's the legend of Paul Bunyan.
Okay. Well, I think that's a good distinction to make.
Mm-hmm.
So then what are myths? Let's dive into it.
So, I mean, in general, myths are what we think of as religions. I mean, that's a good place to start.
Okay.
Or the mythic element is a part of all religions, and that's whether you're talking about, like your friend was saying, Catholicism, but that's true whether you're talking about Greek religion back in the classical Greek days, or Shinto in Japan, or the old Norse myths. They are myths in the sense that every culture has a myth, or
So
myths
are
plural.
yeah, so let's make that distinction though. So all religions are myths, but not all myths are religions.
Correct, although it's hard to find myths that are not religions.
Okay,
It
okay.
is possible, but it's hard. So whenever even my students ask me that question, I go back to Joseph Campbell, who identified the four functions of myth.
Okay.
And so it's like a myth has to cover these four areas.
And they
And
are.
again, I'm going to tell you,
Okay.
every culture needs a myth because there's a way in which the myth is the basis of the culture. And then that would depend on a different sociologist. Some say that the myth is a reflection of the culture. So the culture comes first, and then the myth is the supporting evidence.
Okay.
Other sociologists would say that maybe the myth comes first and the culture evolves out of the mythic themes in the myth. But I would say most sociologists say, well, a myth is just a reflection of the culture.
Okay.
So that doesn't exactly answer, Joseph Campbell's four functions. So
Yes.
the first function of myth is to inspire a sense of awe.
Okay, I could see that. That makes sense.
To open the mind to the awe and grandeur and mystery of the universe.
I think that makes sense.
And you would
Yeah.
say that happens in all religions. I
Right,
mean,
yeah.
let's say Wicca,
Okay.
there is an opening to the mystery of the universe.
Definitely.
Right.
Definitely.
And again, Christianity, Shinto,
There is, yeah, exactly.
right
Something
down.
bigger, something higher, that are along that line.
And let's say Joseph Campbell, speaking of Catholics, I mean, he was raised a Catholic at any rate, thought the best example was when you go into a cathedral,
Okay.
and especially, the flying buttresses that make it,
The old European ones that were
how
just
tall.
gorgeous, yeah.
And the stained glass and everything, and that it is a wonder to behold, and that it automatically lifts your spirits into being aware of this larger thing. So that, like we talked about last week, in that sense, the cathedral is a symbol of the mystery of the universe. Or we talked several episodes ago about the ziggurats in ancient Babylon.
Yeah, I'm sure those are breathtaking.
And when you think, of a certain culture and you have never seen anything like that, I mean, it's the only building in the culture that is that massive and monumental and tall, and there you go. That's opening to wonder. And then it doesn't have to be on the outside, it can be more also in an introverted way, the opening to wonder inside yourself.
Yes, and I think that, I mean, that's the goal, right? Even though there's more of,
Yeah,
we would hope that the
you,
goal it would be internal,
the
I
the
guess.
the outer right is a prop or an inducement to the inner,
Yes, I get
let's
that.
say. But let's say, like in Buddhist meditation, then the practice that is prescribed, this is how you should meditate,
Yes.
is directed towards the opening to wonder, let us say.
Okay.
So that's
Okay.
a kind of a purely introverted way, although, Buddhist temples are beautiful,
They are
also.
gorgeous.
So there you go. I mean, a myth needs to do that.
So, that's number one.
Awe is not number one. Number two, he calls the cosmological function of myth. And that,
Cosmological.
right, and that every, the myth in the long run needs to explain the world. How the universe came into being, our place in the universe, how we fit in with this larger thing, how human beings were created and came to be. That's all cosmological.
That makes
And
sense.
you can think of any myth you want to, and there will
Yeah.
be that cause. And it'll, of course, they have different ways of thinking about cosmology, but the underlying thing that puts it all together is explaining how the world that you live in came to be.
Yeah, I was just thinking there's a lot of different ones. There's.
Well, in Hinduism, for example, you know, which is a very, very old
It is, yeah.
myth. I mean, the cosmological function is vast, 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 vast. You
Yeah.
know, that how does the universe come to be? And the universe is the lotus flower that grows from the navel of the sleeping Brahman.
Yeah, I like
And
the visualizations in the Hindu are always so
yes,
beautiful.
and the universe is the dream of Brahman.
Right, yeah.
And when he wakes, that universe disappears like a dream.
Like a dream.
And when he dreams again, a whole nother universe is created. And in the Hindu mythology, this has gone on for billions of years. Multiple universes.
Right.
See?
I love that.
And then you would say, I mean, people perhaps are familiar, you know, with the Christian
Right.
or
Yeah.
Judeo-Christian cosmology,
The 7 days.
the 7 days and things like that, and how human beings were created and all that.
Yeah.
Let's say in the Hopi mythology in the American Southwest, sorry, back up. It's the Navajos. Their creation myth is that human beings emerged out of a cave in the Grand Canyon.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know this one. That's cool.
To go back to the Hopis, they believe that human beings are the children of the sun.
Right.
And many of their rituals and practices are about aiding and helping the sun.
The
And
sun,
that
yeah.
is the role of human beings.
Yeah. There's a meme that has a colonial person and a Native American, and the colonial person says, you need to believe in God or whatever. And then the Native American just says, at least the sun is real. And I'm like,
Ha, ha.
ha! Yeah, the sun
Very,
is real. It makes sense to worship the sun to me.
very good. And I would just add back to our last episode on symbols. The sun is the symbol.
Yeah.
So it's not exactly the literal sun.
True, but like life bringing, I mean, we would not
The
exist
life
without the
bringing
sun.
force, and then again, as the symbol, like the cathedral,
Right.
is that the outer fact makes the room for the inner facts to come. Okay, so that's the cosmological function.
All right, we got two down.
The third function is the sociological function, Campbell says, which is about the society. So that every myth tells you how to be in society, your particular society. It tells you what is right and what is wrong, what is good and what is bad, how to behave, how not to behave, as in, you know, thou shalt not.
Yeah, X, Y,
That
Z.
that's the
Yeah.
sociological function of myth. And so you would see that's not only a Judeo-Christian, that's in every religion. I mean, it's in Shinto too, about, you know, how should you behave? What is right and what is wrong? And let's say in the Judeo-Christian tradition, right? It's honor your mother and father. Let us say
Right. I
that's a
mean, the Ten Commandments,
so
there's a lot.
that's the sociological function. But in Shinto, in Japan, It is very much honor your parents. There is great honor to the parents. And then because Shinto is based on the older animistic Japanese folk religion, then it is honor the ancestors. That's a very big part of
They're
Shinto.
very connected to their ancestors.
And they have ritual practices which remember the ancestors and also some Native American mythologies are also focused on honoring ancestors too, by the way.
Yeah, which makes sense. Shinto temples in Japan are just so beautiful. Think about them compared to more of the Judeo-Christian ones, and it's just so different.
Well, I mean, it's different, but then the archetype, let us say, is still there that in Shinto, right, when you go to a temple, you light incense going into the temple, and you may specifically say a prayer for your ancestors, for someone in your family who has passed, and you're remembering that person by lighting the incense, which is very similar when you go into the Catholic Church.
Catholic, you like
You
candles.
light a candle and you also say a prayer. That is all in this sociological function because, again, a society is not a society until it has rules. Instead of
I'm
being totally amorphous, I mean, there are no rules.
anarchy, no rules.
Right, that's not a society. So there has to be the sociological function, but of course it's quite different in different cultures. You know,
Expression.
what is right and what is wrong and how to be in society and all that. But it's a very important function, the sociological function. Then finally, the last function is he calls the individuative function, which really means that a myth also needs to tell you how to live a life. It says, this is how you live an individual human life. You should do this, you should do that. And if you do that, you're living properly. As in, you know, let us say, you should get married, you should have children. Part of telling you how to live a life.
Well, I'm thinking back to did the Greek and Roman ones specifically say this is how you should live, or were they just saying that because they're more like, I feel like they're more like parables, like they through the story you learn that it's not good to love your mother or whatever it is that they're talking about. Feel like it's less spelled out than a lot of the more modern traditions.
So this is where it gets a little complicated. Because when we talk about in my book, Living Myth, that implies there are also dead myths. So or historical myths, like you're talking about, like the ancient Greek and Roman religions, what we have, right, are the stories, which are really important, but we don't have the practices. And in that sense, it's not a real religion anymore.
Interesting. Yeah, I was gonna, it's on my list here to ask you what living myth means.
Okay.
So why don't we just dive into that one?
Okay, so just to review the four functions of myth, right? The opening to awe and mystery, that it needs a way to do that. The cosmological function is it tells you how the world came to be and human beings came to be. S sociological function, it tells you about the society, that what is right, what is wrong, what is good, what is bad. And then the individuative function is it tells you how to live a human life satisfactorily. Okay. A living myth does all of those things. Jung once said that a myth is a vast educational system.
Vast educational system.
It educates you into all the things we just talked about, into dealing with mystery, into understanding the world and the cosmos, into how to behave, how to live in your own society, and then how to live your life. It's educational in that sense. And so what I said in my book, this is an old book, this book is 1993, but it still holds true today. And people say, well, yeah, all the myths, they're not true, they're false. We don't even have a myth anymore. We don't believe in any of those things. And the answer is, without a myth, then how do you know how to live a life? Do you just make it up yourself?
A good
How
question.
do you know how the world came to be? How do you know what's right and wrong? And how do you know a practice of encountering the great mystery without a myth that instructs you? That's the education, the instruction. And so part of it would be that a living myth, if you follow the practices of the myth, it develops your psychological tools to do those things. Right? If you do what it says to do, you go, you light candles, you go and you
Honor your ancestors
kneel, and
and
you do that, and you follow what you were told is right and wrong. That in a myth that is alive is functioning. So I think I got to functional, non-functional. It functions in the sense that it trains you about how to live a life. The big sentence then in my book that I hate to quote myself, but
Go for it, Dan.
no one else even talks about this kind of thing. I mean, because this is the point about it. A single human life is far too short a time in which to discover how to live a human life.
Wow. That's a lot. I,
Let's
yeah,
say
yeah.
you have 80 years to figure out all of these four things by yourself,
Oof, yeah.
and you can't. It's too much to get figured out by yourself.
That's, yeah, it's a
And
lot.
we need the myth. And the idea again that people just make it up, all these stories, like Hercules and well, that people just make it up, like a novel, like it's like a novel. And in
I
fact,
get that.
you'd say in L Lord of the Rings, there's a whole mythological system
There is,
that
yeah.
Tolkien made up that covers all of the four functions, and it's a made up mythological system, like a novel.
Yeah,
Okay.
well, we love that.
Jung said that a myth, of course, is not made up. It is not an ego, a product of the ego. Let us say Lord of the Rings is a product of the ego. Except that you would say part of the writing process is to be in touch with the unconscious. So even in Tolkien, his unconscious is creating this myth that he created, his unconscious. Again, it's not exactly an ego product. Jung said a myth is the answer of the psyche to the issue of the moment.
The answer of the psyche to the issue of the moment.
Because a single human lifetime is far too short a period of time in which to learn how to live a human life.
So,
That
how does that play out, though? So, you're in a moment and you don't know what to do,
well,
so you look back on the myths, or.
in a cultural moment,
Oh.
larger myth, cultural moment, issues emerge. And how will this be dealt with?
And then they lean back on the
And
myth.
then let's say, well, no, this is the myth creating process.
Oh, I see.
Let's say the problem of good and evil, like that is a question in a culture. How are we going to wrestle with this problem? And the answer is by trial and error. And see what I mean?
Yeah, that's that does trial and error seems like it would be
So
problematic.
that it's kind of an evolutionary process where the unconscious provides, well, this feels good. I like to light candles, and that's not ego also. It's just that, see, there's something going on. It's touching something inside, and that's the psyche doing its thing. And then you say, I like this, feels good, I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't like to light a candle?
And then it starts to become functional
Right.
in the sense it works. The
It
myth,
works. Yeah.
this, like, okay, yeah, when I light a candle, it puts me in a certain mental space.
Yeah.
It works.
It
It's
works.
functional.
Yeah, I think there's specifically candles, I think, are across so many
And
different things.
many, many different religious practices from all over the world. So you would say that is getting what a living myth is functional.
And then it gets reinforced because you do it and it works, and then you keep doing
Well,
it.
and then you would say yes, it's convincing. That's what I say. And
Convincing.
what's convincing is that it works. And that's how it spreads to many people, because when it's functional, it works. And that's what's convincing.
Interesting.
So again, it's not an ego decision. I'm going to decide to be in this religion. Maybe I'll decide to be in that religion. See, that's not it at all. The ego can't play around
Really?
at that level. No. Because what are you looking for in your life? You're looking for something that works,
Something that works.
a practice that
Right.
works. And then the myth becomes the container that holds it. So, well, why do we do these practices? Why? How does all this fit together? And then, boom, there it is, and it
There's the map.
works.
I'm interested in that ego part just because I know for me, for my confirmation, I had to learn about a bunch of different religions. I know that there's other confirmations that don't do that. We were at a very special church, but I had to learn about Buddhism and Judaism and Muslim. And we spent a year going over all these different religions. And then at the end, we got to make the choice about whether we joined our church or not. So is that not the ego making a choice, or would you say that my subconscious was the one making that choice?
In the long run, it was your unconscious, not subconscious.
Sorry, unconscious.
We don't use the word subconscious. And
Oh.
again, subconscious, sub, as it Latin, means under, beneath,
Under, yeah.
below. Well, how do you know the unconscious is below?
Okay, I guess that makes sense.
Think about it.
Yeah,
When we talk about the unconscious, it is
that's
also, it's
everywhere. Yeah,
above and it's below,
that's a good point.
and it's more expansive than the ego. So it's on the sides, much more expansive.
We
And
have to
there's
do a
a
whole podcast about that.
little that subconscious means less than, below.
Underneath,
Yeah.
yeah.
And no, it's not.
Okay.
So
Back to ego
I would
conscious
say that your
myth.
confirmation is a bit of an ego trick. Let us say a Jedi mind trick to give you the illusion of a choice,
Okay. I like
and
that.
that you think you're making a choice, but you're not actually making a choice because of the social pressure all around you of the other kids who. And
There were some kids that didn't go through with
and
it.
there were some kids that didn't go through, I happen to know, and a certain kid that we
A
both
friend of
know
ours, yep.
really did discover that that didn't work for him at all, and he ended up in Nepal, and was
He really went for the
he had
exploration.
quite a journey, yeah, in a good way. So in that way, it worked, but also that would be his unconscious telling him, yeah, this does not work for you. So there is the question of your childhood mythology, your childhood religion, and should you
Okay.
stick with it, or should you abandon it and find something else? And again, in this psychological way of talking about it, it does have to do with what works and what does not work.
Right.
That functionality or lack of functionality is an important piece. But this is what I talk about living in the myth. Do you live in the myth? Or have you fallen outside the myth
It's an interesting distinction.
of your childhood?
Right. So, like people that just go to a church on Christmas and Easter, they've kind of fallen out of the myth,
No,
or?
there are people who never go to church at all and say, I'm Catholic. And
True.
they haven't talked to a priest. They never go to mass.
Right.
But they're Catholic, and then the ritual practices and things like that. Because, well, when it comes to getting married, I'm Catholic,
Right.
and I definitely want last rites and the Catholic burial. It's like,
Okay.
so like I'll keep that part of the myth because,
That part works.
and I don't have to worry about the rest. See what I mean?
Yeah.
And that actually might work for that person, because this question of functionality, being in the myth or falling out of the myth. There's a famous passage in Jung's autobiography, and the title is
Okay.
Memories, Dreams, Reflections, which is a very interesting book because it is literally memories of his and dreams of his, and then
Okay.
reflections about the memories and the dreams.
Okay.
So I forget, maybe he was 38 years old. It's a bit of a midlife thing. And when
Midlife crisis.
he was wrestling with myth and thinking about myth, coming to the conclusion that the modern world is getting to be without myth. The myth is dying.
Can we live without myth, though?
There you go. So he asked himself, so it's like a personal dialogue with himself, and one part says, so do we live in a myth anymore? And they're like, no, I think we don't. And then the voice says, well, do you live in the myth anymore personally?
And did he?
And he said, no, I don't think I live within the Christian myth. And then the voice said, and if you don't, what myth do you live by?
What did
And
Young
then
say to that?
the famous quote is, at that point, my conversation became too uncomfortable and I stopped.
His conversation with himself became too uncomfortable, so he stopped. Oh, man.
See, like, why would it be uncomfortable? It's like, well, what, okay, if you're not going to live within the myth of your culture, the myth of your society, the myth you grew up with as a child, then what are you going to live? What
I
is
think that's
going
really interesting.
what's
And we
going to
have the
be the motivating factor for you, and how are you going to know how to live a life then?
Yeah, and I think with the age of information and technology we live in, that there's so many more options available to people now.
Well, that's not a myth exactly. It again, you remember the historical part, like I said, a living
Yeah.
myth versus a dead myth. Oh, you can read information about all kinds of myths.
But we have
That's not,
access to it. I mean,
well,
not
no.
everyone can always travel to China and learn about Shinto, but now we have the internet and you can talk to someone who is Shinto and you can learn about their practices.
And that's all ego.
But that's all. Okay. So
Le
if you didn't grow
learning
up
about
with it,
learning about a myth does not mean you live in it.
then how do you, like, if you grew up Christian and you want to not be Christian anymore and you look at different religions and you're like, this one feels right to me, how do you then start living that myth instead of the one you grew up with?
When you live the practices, it's functional. It works.
Okay.
It's about living, not the head.
Well, and that's what I'm saying is that you have
Yeah.
access to what the different, things that you're supposed to do
And
are.
then you learn it, but that it's the actual living it,
It's
doing
the
it.
doing. Okay.
And then if it works or it doesn't work, it's functional, it's non-functional.
Okay.
Then it can be a myth for you, and you're converting
Yeah.
to Buddhism. I mean, pick one,
Well,
pick
that's what I'm
one.
saying, that there's so much more access now than there's
Or
ever been before.
Cat Stevens,
Oh,
the
he
folk singer,
Muslim.
he converted to, yeah,
To
no,
Islam.
well, he was Greek. I mean, he was raised Greek Orthodox, but he converted to Islam. Yeah, and people convert to Judaism, and people convert to Buddhism, but that then would be you're going back into a myth.
And your question was about getting outside the myth and how do you do that? So,
And are there, can you live without a myth, like you said? Is that even possible? It's like,
is
well,
it
no,
even possible?
I go back into a different, I go into a different myth, and I'm in the myth. And then when you're in the myth, then you accept that worldview of the myth, and the Buddhist worldview, or Muslim worldview, or Christian worldview. That's being in the myth, insofar as it is functional.
Okay. So like
So
even
there.
atheism, is atheism still a myth?
Let us call it modern scientific materialism,
Okay, there we go. That's a good word for it.
of which atheism is an aspect for many people who have a materialist worldview. And so you would say what is functional in that worldview is a bit the cosmological function, like people accept that. How was
Big Bang, that we're
The
randomly
world created?
here,
Yes,
that we all evolved from the
there you
cosmic
go.
goo and all
There's
that.
the cosmological function of myth. Because how do you know there was a Big Bang?
They just recorded the radio waves, right?
The cosmic background ra
Cosmic
radiation.
background radiation, yeah.
Well, and what do you? You see what I mean? No,
Yeah.
we're accepting the myth, the story, and
So,
I accept it because I'm not a physicist. I mean, I don't know
oh, right.
personally, and I can't do the math.
So
So
we're accepting what they're telling us.
it's functioning mythically, but
Okay, that makes sense.
it does tell me how the world was created, and then it tells me where human beings are in the cosmos. And all of those are mythic functions.
Mythic
And then
functions.
you would say, well, then is scientific materialism, what about the opening to wonder and mystery? I mean, does it do that function?
I think it does.
And then some people would say, again, back to Carl Sagan and cosmos and the new cosmos, like you pointed out, and all these images from the James Webb Telescope and
Oh, they're so
Hubble.
beautiful.
I mean, yeah, that is wonder and a sense of mystery. In one of my books, I have a quote from Einstein who says, I believe in the mystery of life. I accept the mystery as being everywhere. So yes, scientific materialism can do that part. I think where it seems to fail then when it comes to the sociological function, I have an issue. It's like, well, how does it tell you what is right and what is wrong, and how to behave and how not to behave.
Well, and then like what the scientific method, like you have to prove things first
Yes,
and
exactly. Like I get Psychology Today in my news feed, and I mean it's a review of various papers that are coming out. And there's a lot of neuroscience, is the hottest thing right now, neuroscience,
Learning how the brain works,
everything about the brain. And then so as kind of a derivative product, especially on the internet, you get that brain scientists say you should do X, Y, Z for a healthy brain, for our healthy relationships, to work with anxiety, because neuroscience says.
That's good for your brain to do crossword puzzles or whatever it is they're saying.
Exactly. And see, is that the sociological function? It's like, well, it's based, it is telling you, if you do this, it's wrong.
The way to
If
act,
you
yeah.
do this, it's right. And the mythical god of neuroscience says so.
was just trying to envision what the mythical god of neuroscience would look like.
See, well, there you
Any of our
go.
listeners are
There's
artists, please draw that
a
for me.
and then does scientific materialism tell you how to live a life? And
I think so. I mean, scientific method, you have to be repeatable. It has to be,
well, and then so
making hypothesis
what does
and
that
testing
translate
and
into you living a life? You choosing your profession, doing your profession, buying a house, not buying a house. I mean, what tells you what is the best way to live a life? And then, of course, well, the answer is you look on the internet and the life coach will tell you the best
we'll
way.
tell you, yeah.
And so, see, Campbell's right. Those four functions have to happen.
Yeah,
And if you say,
it makes
well,
sense.
I'm out of this myth, so I don't take the way anymore that Shinto works. I'm not going to be a Shinto anymore. Then you have to have something. And you say, all right, I embrace scientific materialism.
Okay.
It's still covering the bases that have to be covered.
Okay.
And
Okay.
then you would say, then is it as the great myths of cultures die, decay, and shatter, what's left? And in one of my classes, in talking about the death of myth, I played the movie Titanic for them.
Okay. Titanic.
A myth,
What?
the large myth that holds a culture, is a large container. It is a,
Hmm, like a ship.
it is a container like a ship. And when myths die and then disintegrate, it is like the sinking of the Titanic. And again, that's what happens when the myth dies, or when you fall out of myth. You're in the water.
Yeah, so it gets a hole and then it starts filling with water.
There is no container anymore, and you're in the sea.
Okay, you're just
Holding
lost at sea.
on to flotsam and jetsam
Into a door.
to a door so that you don't drown. And it's like that's a one piece of the myth that died. You see what I mean? And is that what this internet life coach is? It's like because there is no
They're the door.
functioning myth, you hang on to anything. And that's what it's like to fall out of myth.
Yeah. Is there anything inherent then, or is it, I mean, the way that you're saying it is like there's nothing inherent just in human beings. Like we don't have an inherent sense of right and wrong when we don't have a myth.
That gets back to our conversation about archetypes.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, what builds a myth? And the archetypes build a myth.
Okay. Yeah, that was one of my questions is
So
how is
yes,
myths created? So I think that goes back to that.
they emerge out of the archetypes.
Okay.
And that's why, yes, there is a universal way of approaching wonder and the mystery of the universe, a universal way of embracing the cosmos, a universal way of what is right and wrong and good and bad, and a universal sort of unfolding pattern of how to live a life.
But
But
without the structure of myth, it's just formless ocean.
back to what we talked about, the archetypes, right? It is form only, it until it
Yeah.
crystallizes into something specific.
Right.
So there you go. The myths that we know have crystallized into something specific.
Okay. Okay.
Shinto, right?
Yeah.
Mahayana Buddhism. Krishna. I mean, I'm just going through, and
Yeah, there's a lot.
Christianity in all forms, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, Judaism, Reformed, and Hasidic, right? Those
Makes sense.
they're specific forms, but
Yeah, very specific.
But that's all we can know of the archetypes is their crystallizations.
Right.
But by definition, then they take on the elements of the culture as they crystallize.
So there's no way to be without with just the forms. You have to deal with what we have crystallized because the forms are unknowable, right?
The knowledge of what lies behind the forms is unknowable. The
Mm.
forms are n knowable through this sort of comparative mythology process.
Okay.
That when you compare Shinto with Buddhism and you say,
Right.
well, they're the same. Oh, wait a minute, they're not the same. But they have these patterns. It's sort of pattern recognition, right?
So I'm thinking about like a specific aspect. So let's talk about thou shalt not kill, like murder, right? Like I think we generally as a population decide that we shouldn't murder people, right? Like it's not good. But then you go back to the Incas, all right, and ritual sacrifice, and they're saying it's okay in this certain circumstance when we're doing it to honor someone. So how do those things like happen? You know, like the myth says it's okay. Like
So, yeah, the Ten Commandments are the mythic expression of a tribal society. So the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not kill, means thou shalt not kill another member of your tribe. The
okay.
Amalekites and the other tribes, you know, you can do whatever you want to them and take their women, and they're not our tribe.
So, I mean, that caveat isn't really written down, though, is it?
Exactly. And so human sacrifice, let's say in the Aztec, Mayan kind of religion, in general, the victims were from other tribes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And
Oh.
or if as a punishment for a crime, somebody committed a crime, and then actually that there apparently is some aspect of that it is such a wonder and a mystery that people would volunteer to be hu human sacrificed
Yeah. Okay.
as
They were
a
like,
thing
yeah, I'm
of
ready.
great,
Do
great, great honor and glory.
it.
It's really only. We spoke earlier of Immanuel Kant, this German philosopher in the 1700s,
Yeah.
who was the very first to, with pure reason, rationality, develop the concept of universal human rights.
Ooh,
That's
I
Kant.
didn't know he did that. Okay.
In Kant, that's called the moral imperative.
The moral imperative.
Imperative is
Okay.
you should reflect on everything you do as if it were now to become a universal law that everybody could do it.
Okay.
And
Oh,
what the
geez.
world would look like if what you're doing, your moral action, became a universal law.
Oh, yeah.
And you would
Chaos.
say, yes,
Yeah.
it's like, is it okay to steal? Well, I'm going to steal. Well, actually, if everybody did it,
Not so great.
not so great.
Okay.
That is one way in which that comes into scientific materialism, is that, well, at least you can have a rational moral imperative, let us say,
Yeah,
that
I
is
do really
not,
like that.
and then maybe that becomes part of the myth in rational materialism that, well, okay, we're going to accept Kant's little addition to the myth here
Yeah.
about the moral imperative.
That makes sense.
It does, but I think we in the end have to get to the Jung's concept of the personal myth.
Okay. Yeah, I was just looking at my questions, and one of them is about why does Jung have such a fascination with myths, and why are they so important to him?
Because Jung was interested in understanding how the psyche works. And then, so what's the data to understand this phenomenon of psyche?
Myths. Yeah, very important.
He had three sources of data.
Okay.
And so you would say, yes, myths as data, dreams. So again, an expression of someone's unconscious in a dream,
Okay.
and psychotic fantasies.
Psychotic fantasies.
As we discussed last week, as in
Okay.
when people become psychotic, schizophrenia, bipolar, and a few other kinds of psychosis, what are the images that happen in psychosis?
Right. And you said that they develop into, or they fall back into an archetype.
They tend to express things that the myths have expressed from all over the world. And so that's data. And so that's why to study is then it's like, okay, all of these, again, back to the archetype, the pattern, there's a common pattern in these very different areas, but they do have something in common. And then that comparative way is a way of saying, well, it looks like the psyche has this kind of aspect, like stars. That's an archetype and an archetypal image, and it
It's
appears
like a movie star?
no, as in stars in the night sky.
Oh, okay. Those are that's an archetype?
Sure. Stars
Okay.
appear in dreams, stars appear in
Hmm.
myths, stars
Okay,
appear
okay.
in psychotic fantasies.
Okay.
Or, like we said earlier in the Hopi, the sun. It's not the physical sun. It's not
It's the
the physical star.
okay.
But
It's
it's
more than that, yeah.
representing something.
So you did want to say something about personal myths. Let's talk about the difference.
So, in my book, which is called Living Myth, personal meaning as a way of life. And I was trying to get at that it's a lifestyle. A myth is at heart a lifestyle, how to live a life. I like where Jung said, for the great majority of humanity, the cultural myths will be enough for them. But there are certain individuals who are temperamentally not able to live in the myth, and they are on their own.
Okay.
And either they perish, again, like the Titanic, the sinking of the
Right.
Titanic,
Okay. What they say?
or they find something within themselves.
Okay, and what can we find within
And
ourselves then?
so the idea is that if all myth is the product of the psyche, not the ego, if you fall out of myth, then the psyche itself can feed you in the wilderness, can provide you with the images that become a mythology, a way of life, the psyche itself. And that is your personal myth.
Yeah, that goes back to what we were saying about living outside the myth. Yeah.
Yeah. So then your own psyche then steps in or can to fulfill those functions. And then that is your, and again, that makes it sound in the head, see the lifestyle part. And then when you begin to live that as a lifestyle, that it's unique to you. Nobody else
Yeah.
has the dreams you have. I mean, in general, the images come in dreams. And in meditation.
Do you have like an example of someone that's done that successfully?
Well, of course, Carl Jung would be one example.
Oh, well, yeah.
In my old book, when I looked for examples, I actually said Tolkien too.
I like that example. Yeah, he definitely created a lot of
He
his own things.
created his own myth and there was a way in which he lived it. He believed it. He participated in it personally.
How
It was
so?
it wasn't just a story. Well, the way he lived his life, the way he found meaning in the world.
He lived like a hobbit, or
Well,
yeah.
he wanted to. He had the fantasy. You can't live like a hobbit when you live in Oxford.
Well,
Right.
yeah.
And I would, another example I used was actually General George S. Patton of World War II fame. Patton
Okay.
told everybody that he was the reincarnation of some famous generals all through history.
Okay. And people believed him, or they were just like, he's a good general. We'll just pat him on the back and we'll be like okay.
He
Like,
didn't
did
care. He didn't care if they
oh.
believed him or didn't believe him. It had nothing
Oh,
to do with
okay.
what they thought, because it has nothing to do with what they think. It
Right.
gave meaning to him.
To him. Interesting.
He had been a general and a leader in ancient Assyria. He had been one of Napoleon's marshals.
Oh.
He had
Huh.
lived many lives, and that this was his role, his duty, and he lived that way.
Interesting. So do then people, like there's been people throughout that have said they're like the second coming of Christ and stuff. Are they living their own myth, or are they just psychotic? What is the line between living your own
See,
myth and being psychotic?
there is, and as we said last time, the ego being melted by the archetype,
Yeah, we did talk about that.
right, the myth of Icarus flying too close to the sun. Well, and you would say that Patton is dancing the line, isn't he?
Yeah. How do you draw that line? It's really tough.
His ego was not melted. He was a general. He functioned very well. He never lost control. Well, I mean, he lost control, emotionally sometimes, but he knew his work very well and did it. So he was not melted.
So, do each of the myths then start with someone breaking out of the myth and being on their own? And then they start a myth, and then other people go, hey, that's working for you. I'm going to see if it works for me. And then it works for them. And then they start a whole brand new branch of mythology.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Isn't, but that's
Yeah.
incredible. I mean that, yeah, Jung, in this whole, I call it the life cycle of myth, the birth and the elaboration and the peak elaboration and the decline and the death over a period of Jung, like 2000 years, that Jung said that those people who fall out of myth are the first wave
Okay.
of. You remember how a myth is the psyche's answer to the question of the times?
Yes.
The issue of the life cycle of myth then has to do, the question changes
The times
and
change.
the times
Yeah.
change. And the old myth is built to work functionally with that old environment, the old times. And of course, right, as the times change, there's a whole new question, and the old myth does not address it.
Right.
And there needs to be something else.
Some
And so
updates.
these
Yeah.
people who are not able, so yes, that the creative personality is the spark that the culture needs for its further development.
Interesting. So I'm thinking like,
Jung says.
so like Mormons are pretty new, right?
There are a variety of, especially in the
In Utah.
19th century America,
Yeah. And so,
many,
but it
many
started with one
religions.
guy, right? That was like, he was like, I talked to God. I have this whole new set of stuff. We're going to do this. And other people were like, okay, well, that seems to be working for me. And then they started a whole religion
Right.
out of
He
it.
had his own sense of images, and it came from his unconscious, and right. But you could say the same thing of Siddhartha Gautama,
Oh, yeah. Well,
who became the Buddha,
Buddha.
or who realized his Buddhahood, that he also was an actual person,
Right.
and that there are legends about his personal life.
Right. Right.
But clearly, he had visions, he had images, and he created something new.
Yeah.
And
I
then
mean,
you would say the prophet was a real human being, and he went into the cave in the mountains and had visions. And
right.
I mean, it's
Yeah.
sort, see, there's a pattern here somewhere, you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And out of that, right, came a new myth about how to live a life. And then there's the story of Jesus.
Yeah, I was gonna, that was gonna be my next one I was gonna talk about. Yeah. So Jesus was a man and he was the, he, they were Jewish, right? Everybody else was Jewish. And,
Well, that's true, right? You
or
have
the
to
Romans.
you have to remember that the Buddha was not Buddhist.
Right. It's just like Jesus wasn't Catholic. Right. Yeah.
Jesus, the Buddha was a Hindu, and Jesus was a Jew. Yeah,
Yeah.
but they had an experience of some kind, and in the legend, then Jesus goes into the desert for 40 days and 40 nights, and
He has visions and
when he comes back, he's the
yeah.
Jesus we
We
know.
all know. Yeah.
So he had, see, that's a mythic pattern.
Right. That's how they break out of the cycle of the current myth. Like
That's
something happens,
right, which
they
is
break, they ch come up with something new.
something like the hero's journey.
Right. I was thinking
See?
about that the other day, about the parallels of what we had
And
talked
so
about in Christianity.
Jesus and the Buddha and the prophet, and you would say Moses is regarded that way. And again, yeah, was Moses an actual person? And it appears, I mean, there's no
Yeah.
particular reason for
Why not?
Moses not to have been a person. And sure, there are legends about his birth and his life and the things he did. Sure, but he also, again, the mountain, there's another
Yeah.
big archetype. I mean, the desert is a big archetypal image.
The
The
mountain.
mountain is a big, Moses went also to the mountain and had this experience.
Yeah.
So the creative individual provides the spark that the culture needs for its own progress. Culture gets stuck until some people fall out of the myth of the culture and experience something new and then bring that back, which becomes the progress of the culture, to
Right.
move to have now a new answer to the new question, not the old answer to the
Right.
old question.
Yeah, it's a whole new world. Different questions. I like that a lot. And I can see now an answer. So I had a question here that was, why do people get so like irrational about their myths? Like it's just like get so like protective, and they kill for them, and they do all these crazy things in the name of whatever the myth is. But I think we're getting to that because it's part of a core essential of who they are.
It's part of the core and central to what the culture is. The wars are the
Okay.
clash of cultures.
Not a clash of myths, it's a clash of cultures.
But another myth is threatening because, back to the Titanic,
Right.
it's
Okay.
like two big ships meet.
And they don't like each other.
What's going to happen?
One of them's gonna sink, probably.
And the people in the ship are so fierce because they don't want to die.
Right. Or they
Like
don't want their ship to sink.
they don't want their ship to sink. And it's like, and this ship is all I have.
Right. Because without the ship, you're in the sea.
You're in the sea.
Right.
So
Yeah.
do not take this away from me, and I will
Yeah.
fight for you
Because
not
people
to
get
take.
so defensive.
And well, and, but that's what they're defending. They're defending
Yeah.
this is my way of life,
Right.
and I don't want to be thrown out and have to and go through what. No. This is my way of life, and I will defend my way of life.
I think the problem becomes when people say, my ship is the only ship, and all your other ships are just fake ships, and you need to leave your ship and come to my ship. Like, I think that's where a lot of the problems arise.
Oh, that's fairly common through the history of religion and mythology.
Yeah, but I
Of
just.
course, your myth is the right myth, and all the others are wrong. Or we, of course, your myth is not a myth, but all the others are myths.
Right.
Of course.
I'm thinking about people going to Africa and converting people to
Sure.
Catholicism and stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Or, colonization and, this is, you have to
Our way of
believe in the
life,
one God. Yeah.
well, our way of life is the best way of life.
Right. And
And
these poor people that
we're
don't know about how
and
wonderful our way of life is.
we're and we're just inducing you to a better way of life, and resistance is futile.
Yeah, it's so.
The, that's the Borg too, right?
I know the Borg, right?
Like
Yeah.
our way
They're going to
is
be
the,
so happy when we assimilate you.
yes. Isn't that the same thing?
It is. It's the Borg. You're right. So the Borg is a religion or a myth.
Sure.
I
Isn't
like
it?
that. I like that. I've never thought about it that way before, but it makes perfect sense.
Covers the four functions.
It
And
does.
then you say, well, no, I, their way of life, it's collective, like a beehive, and our way of life is individual, and we have choices, and no, the collective is ours is a better way of life. You're
Why
like,
would you want choices?
right? You're like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It, but it is your myth, and it is your ship that you live in,
Exactly.
and the idea of jumping ship is pretty
Scary.
daunting and
It's
scary.
scary. All right. Well, Dad, we've talked about so much today. I think that we have a lot to chew on, and our listeners can spend the next week thinking about all of these things that we've brought up. But I think it's a really good base for what myths are, and I hope that people can start using this term in a more congruent way to its meaning. And thanks again, Dad, for enlightening us and having this wonderful conversation with me.
Thank you. See you soon.
All right. All right, well, thank you for tuning in, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Dad about myths. I'm sure it's a topic that we'll be talking about a lot over the course of this podcast. If you want more from me, Molly, you can head over to my website at queenofcupsapothecary.com. If you want more from Dad, head over to his YouTube channel, History of Ideas. As always, if you have any questions, feel free to email us at ajunionandawitch@gmail.com. I would love to start a segment where Dad answers your questions, so please feel free to send them on over. This podcast is coming out on April 8th, which is the day of the solar eclipse in Aries. I hope that you have a chance to go out and see it. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful cosmic phenomenon. I'll be throwing an eclipse party at Peabody, so if you listen to this in time, feel free to come out and join us. We'll be at Granite Coast Brewing in Peabody, Mass. Well, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful week, and we will see you next time.